Radio MD. RadioMD.com.
He's a cardiologist. He's a chef. He's America's culinary interventionalist. It's time for Code Delicious with Dr. Michael Fenster.
Hello, Food Nation, Healthy Nation. Are you ready for the scrumptious and the salubrious all wrapped up in one tasty treat? I know that you are, and I know you know. That means it's time once again for another Code Delicious. I am Dr. Mike, and we are exploring Code Delicious today, brought to you by our friends over at Real Salt. Hey, are you keeping it real? We always talk about real food, authentic, wholesome, and it's got to have a little personality, you know, like me. What's in your salt? Go over and read that ingredient list on the panel. You may find things that you'd be surprised are included in the salt. Fillers, anti-caking chemicals. Some even have dextrose, which is a sugar. That's why you want to use Real Salt. It's mined from an ancient ocean that comes from a time when the world was much younger and much healthier than it is today. Head on over to realsalt.com. Check out your grocers. Make sure you put Dr. Mike in the coupon code for that special discount just for our listeners. Today, we are talking about carcinoid and carcinoid syndrome. And I know you're saying, Dr. Mike, what the heck is going on? I've never even heard of that. Well, one of the things that we're learning as we try to help people with many forms of chronic illness, whether it be heart disease, diabetes, you know, we've talked about that before, types of gastrointestinal cancers, carcinomas, etc., is that when we talk about the food and the treatment and the approaches for those folks, we find lessons that kind of walk their way backwards to help all of us. And that includes food, approaches to food, and approaches to health and care in general. And I'm delighted to have as a guest today to educate us about carcinoid and carcinoid syndrome, Cindy Lovelace. Now, Cindy began a radio and news career in Nashville at WKDA, WKDF. And, well, I'm not going to go back there because she's a very young lady. Let's just leave it at that. At that time, she served as a Capitol Hill reporter. Then, of course, given her talents, was made program director and news anchor. She later became director of promotions at WKDF, WGFX Radio, and then promoted to director of marketing promotions for the Titans Radio. That's right, the Tennessee Titans Radio Network. And during her career, she's launched several large-scale concert events, including national artists, worked with Nashville Convention Visitors Bureau, and actually has helped to rebrand and rebuild Music City. So I want to welcome to the program Cindy, and I want her to take it over from here and tell us a little bit more about your story, because at this point in your life, things start to get interesting.
They certainly did. Thank you. And thank you very much for having me on the show. I appreciate that.
A pleasure.
Yes. So my career was in radio and in broadcast media and then in marketing and promotions. And so I wasn't quite prepared for what happened next. First, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And this was in 2005 while I was still working in radio. And I became involved in a lot of organizations that were helping bring awareness to cancer and fundraise for cancer research. And then I left radio and started working for a foundation that specifically did raise money for cancer research and funded a lot of hospitals throughout the United States, including one in Nashville. And what I didn't realize is that all of this was kind of leading me up and giving me a lot of tools to do what I am doing now. And in 2011, I was diagnosed with a little-known cancer, particularly among medical professionals and certainly out there in the general community, and neuroendocrine cancer, which is also referred to as carcinoid cancer. And that is why we use the acronym NET, because most people can't even pronounce neuroendocrine. And I know when I was diagnosed, I was, what is that? And so it led me on a journey of trying to find even medical professionals who could help me understand this disease and this cancer. And as a result of that, and I'm kind of fast-forwarding here, I decided to quit my job. And with the doctor that I eventually did find, who knew a lot about the disease, we co-founded the Healing Net Foundation, and we're trying to better educate the medical community and also help patients advocate for themselves and navigate this complicated path.
Well, But certainly, you know, knowledge is power, whether it be, you know, pursuing things of health and wellness or dealing with an illness when we're confronted with that. Looking and understanding, you know, how the quality of foods and our food choices, you know, can affect us on that health, wellness pattern or dealing with certain illness decisions. But you talked a little bit about neuroendocrine tumor. So we're assuming here that you're talking about a cancer. And what makes this kind of cancer unique from, say, or different from the breast cancer that you had to combat years earlier?
Sure. Well, neuroendocrine cancer is a cancer of your hormone-producing cells, and they can be anywhere in your body. So that means the cancer can be anywhere in your body, and that in itself causes a lot of confusion because then it can be referred to as being in a particular area and referred as that type of cancer when it's really a neuroendocrine cancer. And as a result, some people produce symptoms. Which is called carcinoid syndrome. And so why am I using interchangeably neuroendocrine and carcinoid? Well, it's because originally when the cancer was first found by a pathologist back at the turn of the century, he was German. And when he saw this under a microscope, he thought it looked cancer-like. And so he used the German terminology carcinoid, which we now spell with a C instead of a K. And that terminology held for years. But unfortunately, what happened was, is that even in the health, in the medical field, doctors think of it as cancer-like, or perhaps not really cancer. So in 2000, the World Health Organization redefined it to be carcinoid being a subset of neuroendocrine tumors. And what we're trying to do is really trying to get that better terminology out there, so that even physicians and healthcare professionals can understand that it really is cancer. And so carcinoid is the subset that occurs in your GI tract or in your lungs. So those are particularly carcinoid tumors, you know, under neuroendocrine. But again, neuroendocrine cells can be throughout your body. And so when I was diagnosed with it, I assumed my oncologist would know all about it and that there would be a particular protocol, just like there was for breast cancer.
And that's a reasonable assumption,
exactly.
Being a cancer specialist, sure.
Yeah. And she was a very good oncologist and still is, and I still go to her now that she's kind of become educated about neuroendocrine, but at the time, he said, you know, I'm really sorry, but there's not very much known about this cancer. It's very rare. And, you know, we're going to send you to have it resected. Mine was found incidentally. But other than that, you know, we really don't know what to tell you. And so it required me to do a lot of research and a lot of follow-up to finally find a doctor who knew something about neuroendocrine. And as a result of that, I discovered that it had actually metastasized. I had moved to another organ in my body. If I had not found a specialist, I never would have known that.
Well, you mentioned two things. One, you said it was sort of incidental, but then you mentioned that some patients have symptoms. So it sounds like you can either have symptoms or not have symptoms. And if you can have symptoms, what are they generally? How would one recognize this manifestation of carcinoid syndrome?
Sure. Well, the symptoms are pretty life-altering. Chronic diarrhea, patients report flushing, turning red, some shortness of breath, and these symptoms, unfortunately, can mimic other what we would consider more benign diseases, non-cancer diseases, like irritable bowel syndrome, Crohn's disease. And so often what happens is that the patients who are symptomatic get misdiagnosed, and so they're treated for these other diseases, sometimes for years. In fact, we've learned that the average time of diagnosis for a patient is 4 to 6 years before anyone really thinks that it could be, you know, a cancer. And so those patients in particular are dealing with these, you know, symptoms that causes them to have to change the way they live. And obviously their diet is affected, you know, tremendously by this. But at the same time, they don't even realize what they're dealing with. And then when they get the cancer diagnosis, I mean, it can be quite devastating to them to think that they've gone along all this time without the right right diagnosis. And then the people, like myself, where the tumor is found incidentally, they often run into the same thing that I do. We found this tumor. It is cancerous. You know, we need to remove it. Or a lot of times people are told that it's not resectable. It cannot be operated on. And what we have found is that if there are neuroendocrine specialists who are also surgeons who actually know more about how the cancer presents itself, and possibly it can be resectable, which is often one of the first-line treatments for neuroendocrine.
But just the fact that you have, and because this is, as you said, it's not very common, but it is like the second most common tumor of the small intestine, that people, and it metastasizes, so people, even if they're not having the symptoms, could end up having a gastrointestinal surgery or resection. And I think what folks don't appreciate, that in and of itself can cause certain symptoms.
Absolutely.
Correct?
And a lot of times people are, you know, they have surgery because they have a blockage, and it's determined, you know, in that surgery that they have a tumor, and that has been the culprit all along, but, you know, they didn't know. You know, the metastasis usually goes to the liver, so a lot of times people will have the surgery or it's found incidentally somewhere else, and they think, oh, I'm done. You know, and like I was told, okay, you have the tumor out, so you're good to go. Unfortunately, that's not always the case, because if it has metastasized to the liver, then it's still a slow-growing cancer, and I really do need to emphasize that, because if this disease is diagnosed properly and is caught early enough, it can be managed more like a chronic disease and for life.
Okay.
And, you know, it's just that, you know, getting patients there to that point, to where they are diagnosed soon enough to where it can be managed is very, very critical.
And so what are the things that, if you do reach the diagnosis, and hopefully as we continue to educate folks about things like this, they start looking and healthcare providers start looking a little bit earlier. And you mentioned surgery and resection to physically remove bulky or obstructive tumors. Are there other treatments that are available?
Yes, there are. And, you know, the good news is that particularly in the last few years, we have had a lot of great developments in this area. First of all, for the people who have the carcinoid syndrome, there's what's called somatostatin analog. Two types. There's an octreotide and there's a lanreotide. And these are medications that are often given by shots. And they are hormone receptors. They basically, you know, inhibit. When you have a cancer of your hormone-producing cells, then it kind of just sends your hormones out of whack. And so you're secreting all these hormones in excess, and that's what's causing all the problems in your body, the chronic diarrhea and the flushing, et cetera. Serotonin, for example, is a hormone. And, you know, as we know, it makes us happy, and that's great. But if it's done in excess, then that's not a good thing for your body.
So wait. You've actually now just hit on, you know, you can have too much of everything, even the happy hormone.
This is true.
Okay.
This is true. Hard to believe, right?
Yeah, there's a important thing there, because in America we're so much about the quantity, and right, if a little's good, then a lot more must be better, and that's the way we seem to approach everything, you know, whether it be food or whatever. But folks, here is proof. Even the happy hormone, and take it from Cindy, that you don't want too much of that.
Right. You don't want too much of it. Too much of anything is not necessarily good.
Very good.
And so we have these, you know, these inceptors that certainly help and help patients function. And then there's also some studies that have shown that these medications may also possibly slow down the growth even further. So you already have a slow-growing tumor, so if you can slow it down even more, then you have a potential of getting ahead of it and being able to manage it better. And then there's also some real exciting therapies in the radiation field. There are radioembolization, for example, that can be done where basically it's like small little radioactive beads are injected into the liver and you know, kill the tumors. You can also have a radio ablation so those are currently available. And then on the horizon are some treatments that have been used in Europe for several years. One in particular is called PRRT, and this basically delivers a radioactive bomb, if you will, directly to the tumor using this octreotide, which again is a kind of like a magnet. It's, you know, it's drawn to the receptors on the neuroendocrine cells, and so think of this mag, you know, something with a magnet going directly to the tumor and then, you know, destroying the tumor.
And so that's using really the tumors. So it's using the tumor's own excess happiness against it.
Well, I guess, you know, maybe you could look at it that way, but, you know, I don't really think of any tumor as being happy. You know, I kind of see them as like angry, you know, maybe they have too much of the other hormones.
Yeah, this is true. And what's really fascinating, so what you're telling us, though this is a tumor, and you know, if people need to be aware of it, really look into the diagnosis and treatment, in many respects, you know, what you're describing is what we see for folks with really any kind of sort of, you know, chronic disease, whether it be diabetes, you can get your sugars under control, but it's something that you've got to live with for the rest of your life. And so it's impacting these folks, you know, not like a sprained ankle where, you know, I wear a cast for a week or two, then, you know, I'm good as new. This is something lifelong, it sounds like, that these folks are going to have to deal with, or am I missing it there?
No, you're absolutely right on. I mean, that's the good news and the bad news. I mean, the good news is that it can be managed possibly as a lifelong chronic disease. And, you know, a lot of people, when you think rare cancer, you think, oh, it's an untreatable cancer that's going to take someone out pretty quickly. And the reality is that it can be possibly managed as a lifelong disease. The bad news is, yeah, it's a lifelong disease, and you're likely going to be dealing with this the rest of your life.
Well, you know, there are, I've had the good fortune to work with some folks who have the carcinoid syndrome and try to look at some of these dietary challenges, mm-hmm. you know, and you mentioned the loose stools, the chronic diarrhea, that's for people who have carcinoid syndrome. That's one of the big things. But fortunately, you know, one of the things that sets it off is something as simple as the physical meal size. And so, you know, our advice to help those folks from a dietary perspective, from a meal perspective, is, hey, you know, approach a tapas style, Mediterranean style, maybe more frequent but smaller meals. But yet, you know, if you look at sharing the food experience with friends, family, or any of us, particularly in this country, again, you know, a little less on our plate would go a long way to making all of us healthier and happier. So, you know, I think that that's important when some of the things that folks suffering from carcinoid, you know, may have to adjust, that when we can incorporate beneficial, good changes that are applicable to their food experience, which is and when I say food experience, I mean, it's something that's bound into sort of our social construct. And so, you know, what we don't want to do is put folks on restrictive diet and you can't do this and you can't have that, and cause more isolation, because it's hard enough to live with something like this. And then you want to isolate folks from, you know, sharing the food experience, which, you know, to me, that's just hardwired in our DNA. And that, I would think, would make things, you know, just tougher.
That's true. And I think, you know, that if we can all kind of get into the mindset of that, you know, I don't have to be on a diet. I just need to, you know, think about the kind of things that I'm eating. And so you mentioned the Mediterranean diet, which is a great example. You know, it tends to be more plant-based. You know, there is some meat involved, but, you know, it's more fruits and vegetables, that sort of thing. And I think, you know, certainly olive oil is, you know, as we know, is healthy for us. And I think that, you know, it's the same for NET cancer patients, is that they have to look at trying to eat a more plant-based healthy diet. The high fiber, I mean, high fiber is important, but then, of course, the folks with the carcinoid syndrome, they may have to look at the types of fiber that they're eating. They may have to avoid the nuts, and they may have to avoid certain kinds of beans and things. But that doesn't mean they can't enjoy, you know, some of that fiber as well. And then, of course, organic, you know, there's all kinds of theories as to what causes neuroendocrine cancer, and, you know, and I'm not a researcher, so I can't tell you what that cause is, but, you know, there are some suspects, and some of it is the chemicals and then pesticides and things that are out there in our water and our food and food sources and such and in our environment. And so the more that we can cut down on that by eating, you know, good organic foods, you know, that can help us possibly avoid some of those agents.
And that's that, Sydney, that's just such great advice, because what you hit on is, you know, whether we have a causal etiology or not, whether we say, you know, this chemical additive, you know, causes this tumor or that tumor. We know that a lot of these artificial things, a lot of these chemicals, a lot of these pesticides are certainly going to affect our gut. And certainly, in fact, you know, the people don't appreciate, we're just starting to learn how complex the gut is in terms of, you know, its communication with the gut microbiome. You know, the bacteria themselves can produce over 50 different types of neurotransmitters, you know, communicating this gut-mind interaction, which we kind of talked about for a long time, but we're just finding, you know, it actually exists. So I think what you're saying is the beauty of some of the work you're doing. There's lessons here from all of us, from those with carcinoid and carcinoid syndrome, you know, up to the listeners who this is the first time they've even heard of something like carcinoid and carcinoid syndrome today. And I love the work you're doing. Can you just tell us real quickly a little bit more about the Healing Net Foundation and then how folks can get in contact with you and the resources if they need it?
Sure. Well, we are a nonprofit. We're a 501c3, and we're based in Nashville, Tennessee, where I'm from, but we're also national in scope. So we have board members all across the United States, including several physicians. And so what we're trying to do is two things. We're trying to better educate the general medical community. We have those experts out there, but they tend to be in particular geographic areas, and not all patients can find them or even afford to go see them. And so we're trying to do a better job of the primary physicians and even the specialists that people may encounter, like the gastroenterologist, who where patients may first present with some of the carcinoid syndrome symptoms. And we have developed a NET primer, which is a 12-page booklet that explains the basics of the disease, and it's written in peer-to-peer language, physicians to physicians. It's available on our website at thehealingnet.org. You can go there under resources and download a copy. Or we also mail these free of charge out to patient support groups or to clinics or whoever might be interested in finding out more about what, you know, neuroendocrine cancer is. And then we also have a patient path, and so we help patients better navigate the system. You know, encourage them to talk to their doctor, encourage them to use something, a resource like the NET Primer, or to reach out to the experts, that do know about this disease.
Well, that's absolutely great, and I thank you so much for all the work you're doing. And folks, once again, that's www.thehealingnet.org, O-R-G. You can follow them on Facebook at Healing Net Foundation, and don't forget, follow them on Twitter at HealingNet1. Cindy, thank you so much for being here today. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on. I'm certainly smarter for you being here, and that's always a good day for me. And folks, until we meet again, may the only pain in your life be champagne.